You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we have a lot to get to. It's a busy episode. We're going to talk about this Cavs game from last night where the Pacers jumped out to a huge early lead and then almost blew it. Then we're going to talk about the importance of Miles Turner, which was sort of on display in this Cavs game, so it's a good time to get to that. Then we're going to talk about the Celtics ahead of tonight's game, so lots to get to, not a lot of time to do it. Let's jump right in. As always, I am one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News, and over at 8.9 seconds. And speaking of 8.9 seconds, I had to post Ben Gibson's game grades after last night, and this story will get to the purpose of this podcast momentarily. And he couldn't post it. He couldn't get to his computer, he couldn't get to the WordPress, but he wrote it in a Google Doc and he sent it to me with no title. And I said, Ben, what do you want the title to be? And he said, Pacers put too much effort into beating Cavaliers. And we try to make all of our titles like a cute pun, but this time he just wanted to be serious because he's right. The Pacers did have to put in way too much effort to beat the Cavs in this game. If I told you that they only won by 8, but at the end of the first quarter they were up by 22, you'd just be embarrassed. They lost the second quarter by 2, they lost the third quarter by 7, they lost the fourth quarter by 5, and in those three quarters I just named, they gave up 109 points in they gave up 99 points in three quarters, which is just horrible against the Cavs team that is just not that good. And really, the hot start, they needed it. You didn't think that. I mean, the Cavs stink, so it's not crazy to outscore them 38-16 in the first quarter. But it just felt like this is what they were doing because they're way better and they're pissed about the loss they had on the Larry Nance tip-in. But instead, they were just, they just kind of sunk into a rut and thought they had it at that point, and they had to really dig in the fourth quarter. So in the first, the happier days, Bojan was just killing it. Bojan had 14 points in the first quarter. He made his first 5 shots. He was spreading out the floor. Every single team ever gets caught off guard by his dribble penetration, which is the funniest thing ever to me now. We're at 40 games. Like, you should know by now that this dude can do some stuff beyond just shoot, but teams still get spooked by it, and it works so well. Secondly, Sabonis was killing it. He ended the first quarter with 10 points and 5 rebounds. He only finished with 15 points. He couldn't really get it going after that, but he was still really good at the start of this game. So full credit to him for getting the offense going on the pick and roll. And Vic was more passive in the first quarter too. And the offense was just humming. Everybody did a good job. TJ Leaf came in and did some good stuff in the first quarter. Offensive rebound, put back. It was just all nice to see. They come out of the quarter 38-16 and you're like, cool. We might see Alize Johnson, who was called up for this one. We might see Edmund Sumner, who used a two-way day to come up and play with the team. And then the second quarter started, they were kind of sputtering, but not anything wrong. I mean, they still went into halftime up by 20. Like, you can't complain about being up by 20 at halftime. The bench was okay. Corey Joseph shot really well in the second quarter. Kylo Quinn was in the game doing his fun passing stuff. Like, it was okay. And then in every other quarter of the game, they just stopped the ball movement. They only finished with 34 assists, but, like, almost all of those, over half of them came in the first half. But they just stopped the ball movement, and they weren't swinging it side to side. They were just kind of going through the motions. It was so obvious that they were disinterested. And it really showed. I mean, the Cavs stink so much that they were able to get away with it from time to time and draw a foul here and there. The Cavs ended up with 20 fouls, and the Pacers ended up taking 19 free throws, which was good because they hit 15 of them. But they just looked lifeless despite how well they were actually able to score. I mean, if Thaddeus Young doesn't hit all of his threes, he was 3 for 3. Like, this is a different game. Same with Corey Joseph getting hot from 3. In the second half, just they did nothing well. They kept Cameron Payne and Jordan Clarkson were finding just not really holes. They were hitting really tough shots, to be fair. But they were finding ways to put the ball in the basket, and it was kind of a disinterested effort. And Tristan Thompson was eating Sabonis alive on the glass in the second half. Thompson finished with 15 points and 13 rebounds. He was very solid in this game. And Alec Burks was finding a way to put the ball in the rim. He finished 7-9 from the field. And just the culmination of the Cavs finding ways to finally start scoring and the Pacers' disinterest in the second half just led to a snowball of comeback point after comeback point after comeback point for this Cavs team, and you started to worry when, you know, it got down to three, I think, in the fourth quarter. I think it got down to five was the lowest that ever got, but it was still got way too close for comfort given they had a 22-point lead. And it's all on the guys, it's all on the players here to just, they can't lose interest like that. And I McMillan was yelling at him all the time, you know, keep the ball movement, and rotate on D, push in transition. And then they'd take another pull up three and another pull up three, and he'd call timeout all frustrated. And it was not good to see them shut down so much when they were winning a game like this. If they had just blown him out, if they had just focused for 1.5 more quarters than they did, they would have all the starters would have rested. They'd be ready to go for tonight against Boston. But instead, we had to see a sputtering blech of crap for two quarters to end the game, where they gave very minimal effort on the defensive end of the floor. So it was a win that is, you know, we'll look back on the season and say whatever, they won on the road by 8 against a divisional opponent. But it was just this is like the worst I felt about a win this whole season. It was just awful. Just to see that kind of effort happen in the second half was just horrible to see. Like, Larry Nance got hurt in the first quarter and was out for the rest of the game after 5 minutes. Who knows how this goes if he ends up playing the whole game instead of Channing Frye 7 minutes or Ante Zizic getting more run than he's used to getting. Just a lot of stuff, like, broke the Pacers' way, and they didn't, you know, they win by effort a lot, and they didn't have that in this game. So Cavs 10 straight loss. I mean, Pacers won 7 of 8. So, like, if you look at it like that, they're still doing good stuff. It was just a very disheartening effort for the better part of three quarters, if you want to count the second quarter. Bright spots. Thaddeus Young actually did take a quarter off of effort, but he gave a lot of effort, more than anybody. He finished with 26 points on 11 of 14 shooting. He was all over it around the basket, and he made all three of his threes. When Thad Young's hitting his threes, the other team just loses. Like, that's just how it is, which is really encouraging that he was hitting all three. One of them, he shot it, and Chris Denari was like, oh, he missed it. And then it went in, and he said, oh, it curved in. And I know he didn't mean it physically curved in, but it just sounded funny to hear him be like, the ball curved. It was great. But great job from Thad to keep focus in the fourth and keep the team headway. Oladipo, not his best performance ever. He had 17 points and was the highest plus minus on the team because he can defend really well. But he got frustrated by a foul call and then took a pull-up three and then took another crappy pull-up three not too long after, and just looked frustrated the rest of the way and wasn't really playing as himself, which you hate to see that from a guy like Vic, who is the driving force behind so much of the stuff this team does. And then off the bench, Corey Joseph was really good. 3 of 5 from deep, 6 assists. He did some good stuff handling the ball, which he rarely does. So if I'm going to highlight anyone else, though, everyone else was below average or what was expected of them. I don't think anyone was, like, bad. I mean, it's trite talking about Tyreke anymore. Like, this, he's just not what the Pacers need. maybe he needs more PRP. I don't know how often you can get it. Because the four games after Christmas, when he got him, I wanted to, like, put an asterisk on his season and be like, okay, new season. And then he stunk two games in a row now. So I don't know how often you can get him, but if he could get him every four games, that'd be sweet. Anyway, TJ Leaf was the big noticeable guy to get minutes here. They wanted to rest Thad because of back-to-back. And with turnaround, they decided, okay, we'll throw Leaf in the rotation. And Leaf actually gave them some stuff. Leaf was a +4. He had 4 rebounds. He had 9 points on 4 of 5 shooting. And his only miss, unfortunately, was a 3. But yeah, he looked actually kind of, I mean, his defense was still not great. He actually looked okay out there. His defense was still not great. I was going to say he had 4 fouls, but I was looking at O'Quinn there. But his defense was still not great. So, he did fine. And actually for Leaf, he did really well, which is really encouraging. Maybe we can see more of these spurts of minutes for him at the end of the first and early second quarter. He doesn't have to play in the second half, but if he could just get 5 minutes a game, even, I would love that so much. So, I know no one else does, but I, you know what? You can't give up on these guys. Give them time. Give them 3 years. So, that's it. Yeah, tough Cavs game. They won, and it still is tough. And that is so, so, so awful to see, because that is the opposite of the narrative for this team after every game. But thankfully, they won, and we can move on to the next game with a bright face. And speaking of the next game, we'll talk Celtics later. But first, I want to jump in and talk about the clear importance that we saw these last two games and at an earlier game in the season of Miles Turner. So stick around, we'll talk Miles Turner stuff. So we all know that Miles Turner is a very good defender. That discussion has been had time after time after time after time. But let me read you the scores of the opposing team in the games that Miles Turner's missed this year. The first game he missed, if you'll recall, was right before Thanksgiving. They played the San Antonio Spurs. The San Antonio Spurs scored 111 points in Indy. If you remember earlier in the year, they played in San Antonio, and the Pacers won by quite a few, and they did not give up 111 to the Spurs. In fact, I think they scored in the 90s. I'm looking for the score of that game, and I can't find it. That's why I'm talking like a metronome. But yeah, they handily beat them in San Antonio early in the season. Why can't I find this? This is driving me crazy. There it is. They scored 96 in San Antonio. They scored 111. The Spurs scored 111 when Miles Turner did not play. Then they played the Raptors three nights ago now, 121. Then they played the Cavs, one of the worst offenses in the entire league, and the Cavs dropped 115 on them. So this is not necessarily a correlation implies causation situation, because a lot of things went wrong in these Cavs and Raptors games effort-wise and rotation-wise that made the Cavs and Raptors get open threes that they were making. But there's more to it than that, and I think Miles would help with stuff like this, because guys like scramble going to the rim at Miles, where they're more composed going at Sabonis and O'Quinn, and they can finish better at the rim. It's like a confidence thing. The hedging on the pick and rolls isn't as good for pull-up threes. So there's a lot of a bleed-over effect to me when you don't have Miles Turner on the court. And Thompson tonight, 6 of 9 from the field. And he usually has a pretty good shooting percentage because he's getting putback after putback, which are pretty easy shots. Only one offensive rebound because Sabonis was putting his butt into him. But 6 of 9 from the field for Thompson. He was getting pretty much whatever he wanted down low. Channing Frye hit both of his shots. They were both threes. I don't think Turner could have done anything about that when Frye was at center. But Thompson, to do that well, you know, Turner could bully ball him a little bit there. And then Sexton and Burks were getting to the rim pretty well as well. Sexton especially looked like he had some nice bursts. And you'd think Turner would deter these guys a little bit more than they had. The Cavs ended up with 24 assists, which they made a lot of shots, so they're going to end up with good assist numbers. But at the same time, you know, they were able to make so many shots and keep the ball moving because, you know, they didn't have this stonewall Miles Turner under the basket to be the backfall. And when you try so hard to avoid penetration, it's really what the Pacers try to do so much. When you don't have your crutch there, when you do screw up in that way, all of a sudden things become a lot harder for everybody else, and just like crisp rotations become slightly less crisp rotations, which snowballs into something else. And then in the Raptors game, where the Raptors hung a million on him, it was only 121. But it felt like more than 121, didn't it? Same kind of story. Serge Ibaka, 7-9 from the field when he was playing center. And Serge Ibaka's had a great year putting the ball in the basket. But again, only one offensive rebound. He wasn't super around the rim a lot, but Sabonis couldn't really keep him from scoring really well. Greg Monroe off the bench really struggled, but finished with 11 points. So these are things that you would like to have Miles Turner for. They were getting to the rim okay as well. Siakam especially is the guy in my head that I'm thinking of had no trouble driving to the basket. So you see what Turner adds here. Even if it's like Sabonis with the starters does well on D, the Pacers are a great defensive team rotating and cutting guys off, and they have a good scheme. So like, no matter what, and they have a lot of plus defenders. In fact, you know, Nick McDermott's not a plus defender, but I would argue pretty much, and Darren Collison's not either, but Bojan's gotten himself to just slightly below average level. Like, they have like 6 or 7 plus defenders on the team. So like, they're going to have a good defensive lineup no matter what's out there. But you can see with Turner now why he's so important, because it's just like an extra cog that forces the ball to move or forces a guy to hesitate for just a second before doing the thing he would have done anyway. Habitually, it's just these tiny little incremental things that have a snowball effect in a positive or negative way for the Pacers just stand out so much more in the absence of Miles Turner. And I think we finally are seeing, you can really see the manifest of his impact in these games now. And some of it is the drop-off between him and O'Quinn offensively is different. I don't say the drop-off between him and Domas, because think of it like this: when you have substitution patterns, like the difference between your starter and your backup is what it is, which Domas and Miles are basically even in impact. overall. I mean, Domas is even a little higher this year, but the real issue is from Sabonis to Okwin. So I compare Turner to Okwin there offensively because of that. You get quite the drop off there. You don't get the shooting with Okwin, even though he's trying, and Okwin can pass really well. He's a very, very good player at finding cutters, but you just don't get all the things Miles offers in terms of spacing. We found the value of Turner over these last couple games, and just remember this when, you know, the next time he plays, which according to Agnes does not sound like it'll be in the Celtics game or in this Knicks game on Friday. I think it's on Friday. So it sounds like it'll be the Suns next Tuesday. So if the Suns stink, but if they hold the Suns to very few points, more indications that he's a good defender will be there. But I just wanted to get that in there as we saw them struggle a bit on the defensive end for three quarters in this game, giving up 72 points and a half to the Cavs, who are terrible. So that's all. Let's talk Celtics. That'll be fun. Kyrie versus Vic. Let's get to it. So Celtics Pacers tonight, folks. That will be a hell of a game. Just like the first one, the two teams came into it. The Celtics were 6-2. The Pacers were 7-3. Whoever won the game was going to leave their arena with a better record. And Vic hit the clutch three with just a few seconds left. I mean, it was just an insane. And he got the steal on the ensuing defensive possession to shut down a beautifully drawn up Brad Stevens sideline out of bounds play. Just a magnificent effort from Vic down the stretch of that game. And if you'll remember, well, he was not like sensational for a bigger part of that game. He finished with 6 of 18 shooting, but he did have 24 points and 12 rebounds, and that's what you'll look back and remember was that last shot. The Kyrie versus Vic games are just some of the most fun things to watch in all of Pacersland, and I am so excited about this one. Irving finished with 18 last time, including a few clutch buckets of his own. The Celtics are finally rounding into form, which makes this game to me way, way more interesting than their first meeting. I know their record was pretty good, but they were kind of limping along to that 6-3, and then they limped along to closer to 500 even a little bit after that. But they're now top 10 in both offense and defense, which is crazy. They have probably only one All-Star, but they have three or four All-Star caliber players who are just not living up to quite that level this year. But Kennedy Knight, Kyrie's going to be an All-Star starter. There's no question there. But Horford, Tatum, and Hayward are all former All-Stars or going to be All-Stars at one point, players who are very good. So there's just, and Marcus Smart plays like an All-Star against the Pacers. So just a lot of guys that could and will probably be hard to beat, and they're good in their role. So I look forward to this game. There's always so much fun playing the Celtics, playing indie legend Brad Stevens and Gordon Hayward. Aaron Baines will be out for the Celtics, so they will be going with Daniel Theis as their backup center. And for the Pacers, Miles Turner, we have learned, will probably, more than likely, Scott Agnes called him doubtful, will be doubtful in this game. So do not expect to see either of those centers playing. Clearly, Turner more impactful here overall. But the first time these two teams played, Sabonis was able to get going for 5 of 8 of shooting. He was 12 points, 9 rebounds, good performance. Well, Turner also had 12 points. But the guy who really stepped up the first time these two teams played, and here you go, get ready for some early season memories, Tyreke Evans. Remember that stretch where Tyreke was good early in the year, and we were like, yes, this signing is fun, and we were tracking his on-off with Vic and all that all the time. Well, that was mostly me, but he had 17 in this one. He was 3 of 6 from 3. He was good, and they need that spark off the bench because Boston, like Toronto and Indy, top class of the East along with Milwaukee, is just very deep. Marcus Smart here was your very good bench backcourt in terms of overall talent, and Smart can shut down whoever he is guarding, which will probably be Tyreke Evans in this game. Marcus Morris is an okay defender. Terry Rozier is a pest. You saw him do well against Eric Bledsoe in the postseason last year. So you can never really count out any of those guys and figure out who they're going to guard. But Tyreke was able to be good in that game, and they need that. They need a guy who can create their own shot for this second unit if Turner's out, because now Sabonis with the starters. Okwin can create for others with his passing, but he can't create for himself. So when the set dies on this second unit, who's going to score? They're going to have to rely on Tyreke. Given how he's played the last two games, that's worrisome. Given how he played the four games before that, that'd be fine. So you kind of got to he's really just hoping, because second unit points are going to be very, very hard to come by for this Pacer team. Also, TJ Leaf gave him okay stuff in that first Celtics game, and that's not going to happen again if he even plays. He had 7 points on 3 of 5 shooting and was a plus four. So I don't know if they'll shorten up their rotation because Thad is so important to this team. Thad played under 30 minutes the first time. No way he's playing under 30 tonight. Look for him to play more, and he didn't play very well. He was only 2 of 11 from the field. That will almost certainly be better. So this things to look out for. The Celtics now have changed their lineup from what it was the first time these two teams played. I don't think Gordon Hayward starts anymore, but they change it up all the time. Sometimes Jaylen Brown doesn't start, I'm pretty sure. It's kind of hard to figure out exactly what's going on. But out of their 35 games for Marcus Morris, he started 18. 35 games for Gordon Hayward, he started 16. 34 games for Jaylen Brown, he started 21 of those. And 39 games for Marcus Smart, he started 19. So we don't really know what they're going to go with for their two starting guards. But I think what they're rolling with now is Irving, Tatum, and Horford will start for sure. And I think right now it's Morris and Jaylen Brown with Hayward and Smart as your bench guys. But just imagine the punch of Gordon Hayward going against the Pacers' second unit. That is something to look out for. They're going to have to capitalize on the diminishing returns that the Celtics offense gets in that situation where they move Hayward to the bench, although it does really help them as a starter. So this is going to be tough. Boston's way better than they were. Not way better. Boston is better than they were early in the season. They figured stuff out. And, I mean, they've kind of been going through a Pacers-like stretch of the schedule that's been easier. But they've just pummeled those teams, and they've done a good job. So this is going to be a tough game. I think the Celtics ultimately are going to win this game, if I had to guess, just because I think they're rolling and they have Kyrie rolling and they have figured out their rotation a little better and they're learning all how to play together when this whole team is healthy, which they weren't a lot last year, which is going to be fascinating to figure out. Their biggest weakness is they struggle to get to the line. They're 28th in free throw attempts per game. And those are efficient shots, and that's, I think, why they struggle so much in that way. Their effective field goal percentage as a team is pretty good, but their shooting percentage as a team is a little bit worse there. So if you can force them to miss with a good hard effort on the defensive end of the floor, which they did a pretty good job, the Pacers did a pretty good job of in the first game. Boston shot 43.2%. You can really limit the ceiling of their offensive efficiency since, you know, they have talented players who can drive, but Tatum, Hayward, and Irving are all pretty contact averse dudes. So you can get away with you can get away with stuff there if you can force them to miss other shots. Celtics take a lot of threes, fourth in the league in three-point attempts per game, sixth in percentage. They just chuck those things, and they never turn the ball over. So you're not going to get any low-hanging fruits. You're just going to have to force them to miss. You're going to have to give good effort. You're going to have to be crisp in your defensive rotations, and they have really smart sets. We all know how good Brad Stevens is because either you just know because he's a good coach or you're from India and you saw him lead Butler to the promised land, so the Pacers are going to have to be in their A game on the defensive end if they want to win, and they're going to have to find a way to, you know, every single wing on Boston, it feels like, it's a plus defender. They're going to have to find a way to manufacture points. Someone's going to have to score on their own. You know, the Pacers will get their points within sets. They do that all the time. They'll get their few points off turnovers that they get every game. But they're going to have to find a way. Someone's going to have to find a way to score when the set breaks down, whether that's Vic or Tyreek, who combined had 41 in the first game, or whether that's someone else like Bojan figuring out a way to get around his matchup. They're going to have to figure it out. So ultimately, I think that it's an uphill battle. That's a lot of stuff they have to get right, and I don't think they'll win, especially because it's on a back-to-back and they'll have tired legs. But you never know. They won the first time. I think that one was a back-to-back too, actually. So they can, and this team has proven to me time and time again they can beat anybody except for the Raptors in Toronto, which they haven't done since 2013 regular season. But yeah, it'll be a great game to watch. I'm excited for it. And that is all I have about it today. That's all for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Tomorrow we'll be back to talk about this game and address the team at the halfway point. This is game 41, which is super exciting. So thank you all for tuning in. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. We're getting close to 800 followers, which is insane. You can follow me on Twitter at TEastNBA. Thank you all for tuning in and have a great rest of your day.